Wow, 81 for a high today across Lubbock. Wasn't the rain nice over the weekend? I don't know, obviously, where you live, but at our house, about 3/10 of an inch of rain Saturday night, early Sunday morning. And I think that's probably about the most we've had at a single rain event since January 1st. I mean, it is was amazing. And then Sunday morning at Easter sunrise services, it was great. The air was sweet. And there was a lot of humidity in the air. I mean, it was just really great. But we couldn't see the sunrise because it was cloudy. This is the Chad Hastie program. I'm Paul R. Bean in for Chad. I just wonder how many people told him no before he got to me to guest host for him. And I want to say one thing before we get back and start talking about the water issue again and the history of water in Lubbock. And that is, for those of you who may not have heard, may not care, I'm retiring from the radio business at the end of this month. I will no longer be doing my commentary here on KFYO at 1:30 in the afternoon called The Way I See It. And I really want to say thanks to all of the people who have said really, really nice things. Whether they meant them or not, I don't care. I still enjoyed hearing them. I was a bad boy recently down in Meridian, Texas. I was public enemy number one. I got a speeding ticket. So I took defensive driving Saturday, and several of the people there at the defensive driving class on Saturday indicated that they had enjoyed listening to my commentaries, and that's always nice to hear. And I know there's probably a few out there that are really happy that I'm not going to be talking on the radio any longer. And I don't blame them. I've been kind of tough on some folks. But anyway, and I appreciate Congressman Naugebauer calling this morning and telling me all of the nice things that he had to say. We've been talking about the history of Lubbock water, and the reason I selected that topic this morning is because there's been so much said and so much written. And some of it has been factual, some of it has not, not because I think they have tried to mislead people, but one of the things that I have found interesting about several of the articles in Lubbock Online is that they had very little or no knowledge about the past history of water issues and why these issues came up so suddenly. Former Mayor Tom Martin, who's in our studio this morning talking about some of the issues that we have had in water, he explained early on that back in about 2002, he realized that we had a serious water issue staring us right in the face with the amazing rate of water loss at Lake Meredith, north of Amarillo, up around Fritch. So the issue was thrust upon us rather suddenly because some moron at City Hall was asleep at the switch. Now, Mayor, we have gone through the litany of water purchases in the Panhandle through Crimwa that Lubbock owns basically about a third of. And so we have a tremendous amount of water at our beck and call. The problem is we've got to call for it, and that's where the plumbing problem comes
in. Sure, we know over the next 50 to 100 years that we've got to drill more wells, we've got to build more gathering pipelines, they're called, from the wells and to the west to fill up that that 96-inch aqueduct or big pipeline, if you will, that used to come from Lake Meredith. And we know that we've got to build more of those things to get additional water. And it's not something that we can just say, well, we're through. We don't have to do anything more. The difference is we have the water. And most cities are struggling with needing additional supply, and they don't have the water to be able to move. We have the water. We just have to build the plumbing, additional plumbing, to get more water down here. And this seems to have been lost in a lot of these articles. And of course, everybody at the AJ is all brand new. There's none of the old heads left there that have any institutional knowledge of the city, much less a big issue like water. They've all retired or moved on. And so, a lot of the work has been done, and there's still more things that have to be done. But the good news is we have the water sitting up there available. One of the other things, for example, that has never been mentioned in any of these articles was at the same time we were dealing with the water supply, we were dealing with water, wastewater disposal at the exact same time. For years, ever since Lubbock's been around, we've disposed of wastewater, sewage water, by using it to irrigate farms out east of the city. The city owns about 10,000 acres of what we always referred to lovingly as the sewer farm. And the city, in a cheap move, did very little treatment of this wastewater. So it was very high in nitrates and a lot of other contaminants, and put it on these farms and irrigated for crop use and for hay for cattle feeding and so forth. And that contaminated water would seep down into the Ogallala at that particular location and contaminate the water supply. And still going back to the mid-1980s, the city of Lubbock was sued by, and the city lost the lawsuit, was sued by the city of Ransom Canyon and the city of Buffalo Lakes for having polluted their wells that they use for water supply because of our lack of treating water to a high standard. And as a result, for now more than 30 years, we have been providing water for the city of Ransom Canyon and the city of Buffalo Springs Lake on our dime to remediate the damage that the previous city decisions to not treat its wastewater contaminated their wells.
Right, and let me add also, Mayor, that in addition to providing that water for those municipalities, we are also providing bottled drinking water for folks who live in the rural areas around what was commonly called the Gray Farm east of Lubbock, and probably will be providing that bottled drinking water for those people from now. One of the former water utility directors at the city of Lubbock said, well into the next century.
Yeah, there's over 300 families or houses that we provide water and have for over 30 years. We now had polluted the wells around the Roosevelt School complex out on 1729, and so now we've had to provide a pipeline and bring fresh water in to provide for that school.
Now, these mistakes were made back in the 1980s.
Oh, they were made back from back to the 20s, 1920s. Right. But we were facing the possibility now in the early 2000s. At the same time, we're dealing with a crisis in supply. We're dealing with a crisis in disposal because the state stepped up and said, if you don't do something to fix this problem, we're going to start fining you, and the first fines will be $10,000 a day, and it'll go up from there. And so the council at the time, again under Mark McDougall's leadership, decided to not only bite the bullet to upgrade our wastewater or sewage treatment plants from what's called secondary treatment up to tertiary treatment. In other words, three levels and actually a fourth level of treatment, so that the water would be so pure we could do several things with it. We could just put it in the Brazos River, the Yellow House Canyon, and let it go on down the river.
To Buffalo Springs Lake.
Or we could impound it in a lake and then pipe that to our water treatment plant and reuse it. Or, quite frankly, we could just run a pipe from the sewer plant out to the water plant and treat the water and go to town.
Right.
And that project is still ongoing because you can't shut the sewer plant down for 5 years and rebuild it. You have to rebuild it while you're still using it.
Right.
So that project should be getting close to being finished to allow us to be able to not only dispose of it properly, but quite frankly, to reuse that wastewater. The estimates that we had originally were that we could replace 20 to 40% of our daily water usage year-round by reutilizing our wastewater as part of our water supply. So one of the projects that we were looking at was building another lake called Lake 7 of the Canyon Lakes Project. Mm-hmm. Between the West Loop, or pardon me, the East Loop and 50th Street, where the old Rim Rock City was, for people who had been around Lubbock for a long time. It was an old amusement park called Rim Rock City. From there down to Buffalo Springs Lake. The city already owns about half of that canyon down through there as part of the sewer farm, and if we purchased the other half, we could impound and provide up to 20,000 acre feet of water a year. The engineering work has been ongoing for many years. I'm not sure what the latest is. Again, I've been out of the loop for 2 years, but there were some technical issues that had to be overcome to make that lake possible. But that is still one of the possibilities, or just simply running that water right straight back to the water plant and treating it. So that's another piece of the puzzle. And so all of these things cost money.
Lots of money.
And totally about $500 million worth of water projects up to this point, with the water rights purchase, pipelines, the treatment center, and then another $100 million or so for the sewage treatment plant remediation and upgrading the water quality. So out of the total city debt that people make a big issue of, and I understand it completely, about $600 million of that is for water and sewer projects. There's also improvements that have been made to the city's well fields up in Bailey County, where the pipelines, the electric lines, the pumps had not been replaced in like 40 years.
Right.
All of that work is part of that. Here's the bottom line issue. When there was an article in the Fort Worth paper this morning about the city of Wichita Falls.
Right, we're going to get to that in a moment.
Their water supply is just literally dried up.
Right.
San Angelo has had those problems, Big
right.
Spring. And so when we come back, I want to talk about what the real bottom line is on water issues and why the public has to change its view on the importance of water planning.
We've got to take a break. We've got a caller holding on. We want the caller on the air. I think we just lost the caller, and I apologize for that. Maybe we can get that caller back in just a moment. It's time for another break here on the Chad Hastie Show, giving you the complete history of Lubbock's water issues. And we'll try to get the caller back in just a moment. This is the Chad Hastie Program. I'm Paul Bean, and our guest this morning with the complete history of Lubbock's water is former Mayor Tom Martin. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Chad Hastie Program. Paul R. Bean, and our special guest is former Mayor Tom Martin, who is giving us a complete history on the water issues that we have faced in the past and the current city council will be facing in the future, or more importantly, in the present. Where were we?
Well, we've gotten caught up on the purchase of water rights and a lot of the projects that we have scheduled. For like Lake 7 and mm-hmm. reuse of our treated right. wastewater and
right.
so forth. But there's a lot of other issues, too, in water planning. And one of the things that's been mentioned lately is desalinization.
Yeah.
And the premise of the article was treating salt water in Corpus and piping it all the way up here, which I don't know. When you talk about astronomical cost, I don't even think that covers it. That would be
they're guessing $2 billion for the pipeline. They can't build it for that anymore.
No, and by the time you tap in all of the cities that would want that water, I mean the cost would be so unbelievably large. It's not feasible. But the issue of desalinization is one that is near and dear to the hearts and is a potential source of water here on the high plains. Most people are not aware that underneath the Ogallala Aquifer, which we've talked about extensively, which is a freshwater aquifer, underneath that there's another aquifer called the Santa Rosa Aquifer that contains, for the most part, briny or brackish water, it's called. It's basically salt water. And there's not a lot of research that's been done to this point on the Santa Rosa, but there is research now starting in earnest by the various universities and water agencies looking at the Santa Rosa. And the estimates are that it's much, much larger than the Ogallala, number one.
Right.
And if a way reasonably priced to be able to desalinate that water, all we had to do basically was pump it up and desalinate it. And there is a test program that's been underway for a number of years in Seminole where they have drilled wells into the Santa Rosa, and they're using some of the wind research windmills at Tech to produce electric power to desalinate that water.
Right.
That's one potential that's out there, and I know we've got a caller.
Right. Let's go to the phones and pick up Danny. He's got a question on our water discussion this morning. Good morning, Danny. You're on the Chad Hastie program.
Thank you very much, Paul. I called in actually on Friday to discuss this very kind of issue and talk to Chad just a few minutes about it. This is one that's been It's stuck in my craw for quite some time now, ever since the city put us on water restrictions. And then a year later, LPNL comes back and says, we're going to have to raise the rates on water because we're losing money. Well, maybe you should have thought of that when you started limiting the amount of water we could use and buy. But what frustrated me was at the same time, Marshall Sharp Freeway's, the end of the construction was pretty much approaching. They were working on the areas right there at the interstate, and I was watching as trucks were dumping water, all just to basically water the new planted seed or whatever they've got on the sides of the highway there, just pouring loads and loads and loads, tank trucks full of water onto this thing. And it dawned on me that they're getting this from fire hydrants in Lubbock. Now, I don't know what kind of contract they had with the city to purchase that water. It was purchased, and that's not a problem for me. But that's also something that possibly somebody could have looked into, maybe possibly just drilling a well and pumping that water rather than using Lubbock drinking water and fire hydrant water. The other issue was, at the same time, because of the construction in that area and so much water being pumped, it was explained to me by the water utility or by somebody at the city of Lubbock in the water department that they have to bleed off these fire hydrants at times to open them up to bleed off because the chlorine levels had declined or dropped to dangerous levels or whatever you want to call it. But
right.
four times in a month, two different hydrants, one at Broadway and Avenue A and one at 8th and Avenue D, four times within a month, both of these hydrants were opened up. I'm not going to say full, but at least halfway where they were blasting out water about 6 to 8 feet from the hydrant. And we're left open literally for 4 hours on four different occasions. Now, I'm guessing that's not just, 100 or 200 gallons of water that pumped out of those things.
Right. Danny, so, one of the things, of course, that's required by TCEQ, the environmental folks in Austin. I don't know why they would be pumping them or allowing them to free flow. Maybe we've only got about 15 more seconds left before we get up on a hard break here. We don't have any time. Danny,
yeah.
Stay tuned, and Mayor Tom Martin maybe can answer that question for you here in just a moment right after this break. Danny, thanks for the call. We're up against a hard break here on the Chad Hastie program. Yes, sir. Thank you for calling. We can't move it back, so we're going to have to hold on for a moment and take that break, and then in a moment former Mayor Tom Martin can explain why TCEQ has us flush these dead-end lines and why they might have been flushing that one more often than not. This is the Chad Hastie Show. I'm Paul R. Bean, and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back to the Chad Hastie program. Water, water everywhere, and we've got a few drops to drink. And let's go to the phones and pick up a question from Robin on line one. Good morning, Robin. You're on the Chad Hastie program.
Good morning. I appreciate all the work that's been done to keep our supplies of water coming through. On a personal basis, the thing that's so frustrating the last couple of years is I realized that the less we use, the more we're charged. And I think that's very frustrating. I think there's a lot of people that feel that. I mean, we've really cut our usage down. And one of the frustrations with LPNLs, we realized our water meters weren't being read. So we don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I think when people talk about conservation, that is one of the issues for just a regular homeowner is, like I said, the less we use. I mean, I was expecting to see a difference on the bill. I mean, we're talking no watering, a little bit on the front yard, didn't replace the washing machine, go to the laundromat, don't use a dishwasher, not a big cook, showers every other day. So we've done some of our stuff, so hopefully we could actually keep one yard, a little bit of watering on it, and very little. But I don't know if that makes sense, but I think a lot of people on their daily lives, I think a lot of the people I've talked to are very frustrated.
I think you're right, and I don't mean to be sarcastic, Robin, but you did see a change in your water bill. It just wasn't the change you were looking for, because they
exactly.
They did go up. Thank you for your call this morning, and I'm interested.
Sure, bigger users, you know, it hit their pocket harder, you know. But I'm just saying that was the irony of it.
Well, the bigger users are being hit also. I mean, it's across the board, and I mean, Robin, here's the bottom line. There is no more cheap water, and to make the improvements and to get the supplies, all of that has to be paid for across the board. One of the problems that has been existing for years, not only in Lubbock, but just across the nation, was we had an idea that we wanted to have cheap water, and the more you used, you got a better rate on it, for example, that if you used a whole bunch more, you got a less per gallon charge. That was backwards as far as conservation goes. And so now the prices have been going up even more for higher consumption than it's gone up for lower. But, you know, it's a frustrating deal. I understand exactly where you're coming from. But you know, the issues, some of the things that have been done in the last couple of years, I'm not familiar with because I'm in that position anymore. But when I was, what we focused on was passing the fixed cost of the system, the pipes, the water purchases, and so forth, everybody equally, and then to pay you paid more depending upon more usage of water. And it looks like they've kind of gotten off of that and gone back to another system. I'm not exactly sure what it is right now.
Well, and I agree with you on that. I know there's a lot of us that feel like we're out of the loop, actually.
Right. Yeah.
But and my income comes from dry land farming, so.
Sure. You've got a double whammy.
Exactly. So, anyway, I appreciate your time. And the information this morning, I think, is very timely.
Thanks, Robin, for your call this morning. I want to mention quickly, we've got to go back to the phones. Bob's holding on to talk to us about water. But one of the problems that was created with this water cost, Mayor, was the previous city council, before you were elected mayor in 2008, changed the tier one to 40,000 gallons a month.
Yeah, which is
which was just astronomical use of water, and one of the most damaging things that's been done to our water supply when we were already aware of the dwindling of Lake Meredith, our main water supply. I thought it was completely reckless, and I've said so many, many times. Back to the phones right quick. Let's get...
Do you want me to answer Danny's question first?
Let's get Bob on. Danny's not holding on, so we can go back to Danny at any time.
Okay.
Let's go to Bob on the phone. Good morning, Bob. You're on the Chad Hastie program.
Good morning, Tom, Paul. I'm going to inject something a little bit different issue, but I think it's certainly extremely important for Allen Henry and White River. And that's the problem of contaminating the watershed for water that normally flows into streams. And I've been around here longer than you have, Paul, so I've seen a lot of changes out there. we're letting all this, or a lot of this pasture land, including conservation reserve acres, are growing up into scrub brush and soaking up that rainfall when it does fall. And an extreme example of that, you can drive from Post to Jayton, and all of that land, and there's millions and millions of acres, this is just a sample of it, is grown up in scrub brush 10 feet tall, and there's absolutely no runoff anymore. That land is going to have to be cleaned up if the state of Texas is going to do anything major about their water problem. It is an absolute must. I can tell you about a ranch. I own one myself in Motley County. In Motley County, that 20 years ago, the person that owned it had removed the mesquite. The stream was running on that property. Springs were flowing. Subsequently, it was sold. It's now grown back into brush and mesquite. There are no more springs and no more flow in that stream, and that's an example of what happens if we don't take care of our watershed, and that's especially important for
you're right, Bob, and there's a that brings up a whole bunch of more issues we could talk for the next week on, and that's the federal government's interference in all this. All of this CRP and these federal programs that have come up that are created by members of Congress from other parts of the country, where they try to come up with a one-size-fits-all, end up hurting us. You mentioned White River. If you fly over White River, of course you can't do it now because they're all dry, but the federal government came up with this brilliant idea to everybody build stock tanks on all the little creeks that feed into the White River, that flow into White River Reservoir. And when they started that building all those stock tanks, which I understand the need to water stock, but they impounded all of the water that used to run into the White River. And you could fly over, you know, 8-9 years ago, you could fly over that land and see all of the reflections of the water in all these stock tanks and no water running into the White River. And so that's been one of a number of issues in addition to the drought that has affected the water, and that's why White River has dried up. Fortunately, Lake Allen Henry, the watershed is only 20 miles long as the crow flies to the edge of the caprock, where the springs that come out of the side of the caprock, which quite frankly is the Ogallala Aquifer leaking out of the side of the caprock, runs down into Lake Allen Henry that helps keep water in that lake. It's not enough to completely fill it up, but when you add that and storm runoff, it can keep that lake completely full. Right now, we're not getting any storm runoff, but we still are getting some. We're still getting some spring flow down there. Not much, but we are getting some, and so that every little bit helps. But you're right, the CRP program has particularly in watersheds, has knocked out a lot of the water that used to run into reservoirs.
Bob, thanks for the call this morning. Interesting call and an interesting observation here on the Chad Hasty program. Water, water everywhere. That's been our discussion this morning. And we'll be back right after this. Well, this thing didn't last as long as I wanted it to last. Mayor Danny, who was a previous caller, wanted the question asked why the city could not reuse the water that's being dumped or bled
flushed,
off.
Flushed out of the system.
Right.
A couple of reasons. First of all, the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, that's the state version of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And federal and state regulations on municipal water systems require that chemical testing be done continuously on the entire system. Until I was on the city council, I didn't realize we have about 100 people employed by the city in the water department that are chemists and chemical technicians. And we have some of the most expensive, very sophisticated testing equipment in the lab out at the water plant out at the airport. and they test water samples throughout the entire system continuously. The federal and state regulations require it, and it's good practice because it keeps the water pure and fresh. The last thing we want is continual boil notices and all of this type of thing is on our water system. But it is a big chemical process. And the area that Danny mentioned was the area around 8th and D and some of those areas around where I think he mentioned the Marcia Sharp Freeway and the interstate were being tied in. That area of town is the oldest section of the city's water system. That was the first part that was part of the original town. The original Lubbock was 4th to 19th A to Q. And it's called the original town. And so the original water system is in that area. And it was cast iron pipes is what was used for water back then, which they rust. You get chemicals, change the chemical properties of the pipe itself. And nowadays we use either concrete pipe or PVC pipe for water lines. But back then it was cast iron. There's even some old lead pipes, believe it or not, that was used for water.
Right.
So a lot of that has been replaced in downtown, but there's still some parts of the old system that still has part of the periodic replacement have not been replaced. And that area particularly is an area that those old cast iron pipes. And because of that, on the periodic testing, they find a lot of potential contamination, and the state requires that you flush those lines. You have to get that water out. You cannot reuse it. I guess you could.
Even if you tried, wouldn't it be so contaminated
that
the reprocess of the water wouldn't be
cost-effective? Or the potential for contamination.
Right.
So to comply with the state regulations, it's flushed out of the system and allowed to – it's not contaminated to the point it's going to mess up the storm sewer system. But as far as drinking water, it cannot be used for that. So that's why he sees that right pretty regularly in that part of town. Eventually, all of those old water lines will be replaced also. But just like the 34th Street project years ago that most people have probably forgotten about, before we ever repaved 34th Street from Q to Indiana, there was an old cast iron water pipe that was part of the system that was built in 1930. That was the major, because 34th Street was the southern border of the city at
sure.
the time. And
there was a cotton gin at 34th and University.
Yeah. And
years ago.
But that line ran all the way down to 34th and Quaker. And it was so old and rusty that we were losing more water out of it than we were running through to serve people in that part of the city. And about 7 years ago, we did a project and we put in all brand new PVC pipe to replace and take that old cast iron pipe out of service. So there's continual updates that have to be made to the system that don't deliver any more water, but they keep us from losing water through either having to flush it so much or, in this case, leaks because of the cast iron being eaten away.
Interesting point. Mayor, thank you so much for being here this morning. And I want to apologize to the listeners this morning because I had set aside about 30 minutes for you to come in and talk about water. And we ended up with 2 hours and still a lot of things unsaid and a lot of questions remaining because there's been so much said about water. And I know a lot of folks are rightfully complaining about their water bills. But as you so honestly mentioned a moment ago, the days of cheap water are over for the city of Lubbock, unfortunately. But I'll tell you, there has been some things done prior to that of which nobody seems to have any control over and nobody's confessing to right now, which led to a real immediate crisis when you and I were elected to the council and caused us to spend about $500 million in bond debt to make sure we at least had a constant supply of clean, fresh drinking water.
And the good thing is we live in Lubbock where we have taken these issues on in the last decade, and we have the water for long term and we have the water for short term. We have more infrastructure to build. We know that. We have things that have to be replaced. We all know that. But things could be worse. Wichita Falls is literally going to stage five of,
sure,
of water conservation.
They're out of water.
That means you can flush, you can wash the dishes, and you can drink, and you can wash your clothes, and that's it. I mean, period, paragraph.
Right.
Austin, the Highland Lakes in Austin are down to about 30% capacity. Barring a couple of hurricanes and tropical storms on that Colorado River watershed up north of the Highland Lakes, Austin is literally going to be out of water by the end of this year. And you can go on and look at the other coming tragedies that are coming in the state of Texas. The good news is this city will not be one of them. And so we're not going to lose Texas Tech, and we're not going to lose our medical center, and we're not going to lose the economic prosperity that we've worked so hard to get.
A lot of text messages coming in this morning. Mayor Pro Tem Karen Gibson says, turned on the radio, heard two familiar voices, and they made me smile. Thanks, Karen. And that's it for the Chad Hastie program. Thanks very much, Ronnie. Thank you for doing a great job producing the show, and for Michelle, who was around for all but the last hour. And we appreciate it. Chad will be back tomorrow. He'll take control of this, and it won't be ragtag like it was today.
And he can rag on us for the next week.
Absolutely. Yeah. At least we give him something to talk about.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and thanks for all the kind words that people have said about my retirement. We'll see you on down the road one of these days, folks. I'm going fishing. Goodbye, everybody.